From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, a budget deal was reached on Friday to keep the government open, but was it a good deal? Tennessee Congressman Dr. Mark Green joins me in studio. Also, is big tech and the social media giants trying to mute the voices of conservatives in the virtual public square? Larry Solov, president, CEO of and general counsel of Breitbart News Network, well, he has the answer. And how much green will the left's new Green Deal cost you? Ken Blackwell, former treasurer of Ohio and senior fellow for the Family Research Council, explores that question. Also, Breitbart legal analyst Ken Klukowski joins me to discuss the president's emergency declaration that will enable him to build the wall. Is the president on solid constitutional footing? And what challenges might he face? We'll talk about it with Ken Klukowski a little later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you happen to be on Twitter, it's at T. Perkins. All right. The president and Congress averted another shutdown by agreeing to a budget deal, which also includes some element of border security. However, the president at the same time declaring a national emergency so that he can go forward in reallocating funds to build the wall. But was the budget deal a good deal? Joining me now to talk about it, Tennessee Congressman Mark Green. Congressman, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, great to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you back on the program. And I should say also Dr. Green, medical doctor, military veteran, and this is kind of a new thing for you in Congress. Let me just start. This is, you jumped right into the fire here in your first term in Congress. With this deal that Congress reached to avert a government shutdown with the president, or I should say the president reached with Congress, was it a good deal?
No, not at all. In fact, I told some friends afterwards I looked for the heck no button and couldn't find it, so I voted no. But, you know, there were many, many aspects of it that make it a bad deal for Americans. But one that really jumps out at me is if you have an unaccompanied child and then someone sponsors that child, the entire family of that sponsor and any potential future sponsors, I mean, that's exactly or nearly how it's worded, basically get amnesty. They can't be deported. It's really crazy to think that we would allow that in law, but that's basically what was written into that bill, just one of many things sort of hidden in there, and one of many reasons why I said, no, this isn't going to work.
You know, Congressman, not all Americans have the opportunity or the duty to travel into other parts of the world. But just in the last couple of years, especially on the religious freedom front, serving on the Commission on International Religious Freedom, I go to a lot of countries. America is so generous and liberal with its immigration policy. You know, you can come and you can be an American. You can become a part of this American dream if you just follow the rules. Most countries, that's not the case.
No, that's exactly right. Mexico certainly wouldn't allow, you know, our people to travel there as we have in the past allowed theirs to come here. And, of course, the big crisis now is the Golden Triangle and the countries that are fleeing. And we understand the situation down there. But the humanitarian crisis of fleeing there and trekking across Central America is also a major problem, and the left just seems to ignore that. They just blow it off, and so I believe it was Pew, but it was a nonpartisan organization that said 31% of the women that make that trek are sexually assaulted during the process.
Right, it was Doctors Without Borders had that.
Doctors Without Borders.
Right.
So this is it's horrific. It's, you know, it's unbelievable that we allow it. But what we allow is hurting Americans, hurting others, and it's unconscionable. And you just wouldn't see it anywhere else.
It's what the president described as a humanitarian crisis on our southern border.
Absolutely.
That is allowing women and children to be exploited.
That's exactly right.
And so for liberals who want to say that they're for, you know, the underdog, they're for the helpless and the hopeless, they're actually leading an effort that is resulting in more women and children being exploited.
Exactly. This is the price they're willing to pay to empower themselves in America. Right? Because, I mean, why would they want to restrict ICE beds? I mean, these are people who have been broken.
Explain that. I mean, that's not a cold place to sleep. Explain that.
No, that's right. We're not. So ICE has detention centers for people that have committed other, you know, that a detainer has been issued on, and they bring these individuals in and they detain them. And so the left wanted to limit the number of people that could go into those. And the only reason, meaning that those people then get released into the country, the only possible reason is that they're potential votes in the future.
And I should note, we had one of the sheriffs on last week that noted a high percentage of those individuals actually have criminal records. Not criminal records from just crossing the border right. illegally, but for other even violent crimes.
But this is the price that the left is willing to pay to try to empower themselves. That's the whole end game for them. And so when you make the argument, hey, 300 Americans, 70,000 Americans dying each year from heroin overdose, and most of the heroin and fentanyl are coming across the southern border, but that's not a crisis. It's interesting. You know, in 1984, when we had, I think it was about 3,000 deaths to the AIDS virus at the time,
right.
Ronald Reagan was said, oh, you're so heartless because you won't demand a national emergency to take care of this crisis in America. Of course, he went on to do some legislation and create some programs that really helped those individuals. This is 70,000 a year dying, and they're just ignoring it.
It is. I think the American people do need to see exactly what you just explained, that the left is willing to allow people to be exploited, allow people to die in order to advance a political agenda of power.
Yes, sir.
Let's talk about the substance of this deal here from the monetary standpoint, the budgeting standpoint, because America reached another, I'm not going to say high water mark because it's certainly not a good thing, but a new milestone in debt, $22 trillion. I mean, that's got to be concerning.
It's really crazy. And if you look at it, it's almost as if we're in a time of gluttony. And let me explain what I mean by that. When the nation has had unemployment below 5%, our average growth in the deficit, or the deficit to GDP has been 0.7%. Right now it's 4.4%. I mean, we are spending deficits close to $1 trillion when our unemployment is below 4%.
I mean, this is the time we should be paying
this,
down the
exactly.
debt.
Exactly. This is when we should be putting money into our coffers. This is when we should, I mean, these are, we have nobody to help because they're all employed.
To use the a biblical analogy here, this is like Joseph, where the 7 years of plenty,
yes,
and we should be storing for the future, but rather we are expending the resources of the future.
Yes, sir. That's exactly what's happening. And you look at the looming crisis in the future. Inflation rates are, if inflation happens, if interest rates go up and the price of our debt, doubles, we're already at a point where we're looking at when just the interest payments on our debt will exceed the Defense Department budget. I mean, when you think about that, that just scares me to death. But the looming crisis with China and the crisis with Russia and the crisis with the trade issues, and yet we are exsanguinating ourselves now financially.
So, Congressman Green, how much discussion among your colleagues is this growing debt? How much of a discussion revolves around that?
I don't think there's enough. I recently got the January version of the CBO's predictions, and I'm going through it, and it's turning my stomach. I'm a physician, so I'm wanting to write myself a prescription for an antiemetic, which is a technical term for keeps you from throwing up, right? But it's just making me sick to my stomach. But we're not talking about that stuff. We are talking about how to regain the majority, which I think we should talk about. But we have a country that's in a very desperate situation financially, and you look at it. We don't even have a balance sheet.
Mm-hmm.
But if we look at the our undiscussed debts, those things like pension plans of federal employees, We are so far in debt. It's just it's mind boggling. It's probably our greatest national security crisis, and we have to address it, and we're not.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. Tennessee Congressman Dr. Mark Green, my guest, discussing Friday's budget deal that averted another government shutdown. Congressman, when we look at this issue of debt, we look now that the liberal Democratic Party controls the House of Representatives, which means they're going to be driving any kind of budget deals. It would seem to me that the best way forward for this president and the Republicans in the House and, of course, the Republican Senate would be not to pass any new budget or appropriations bills, but really just to continue at least spending at past levels and not allow them to jack up and spend more money.
So, you know, I think that's a great thought. The only problem with that is when it comes to Department of Defense. The continuing resolutions really hurt them. But it's problematic because the Democrats won't agree to increases in Department of Defense spending unless we give them all these, you know, cherry blossom gifts on the other side. And it's interesting, when we passed the deal, I think it was 8 months ago or something like that, and we had to give them something like $30 billion just to get them to agree to sign this NDAA and get our military funded with the money to make up for sequestration and the bad decisions of Barack Obama. That money, the departments that it was sent to, they didn't even have a plan to spend it. So they had to create a new law that allowed them to roll the money over to the next year. That's how terrible it was what the left did. But continuing resolutions would be great. I just worry about the military because they've got to write long-term contracts for aircraft carriers.
And, right.
You know, that's tough to do when you got a CR.
But the trade-off is probably going to be 2-1. For every dollar you would get defense, you're going to have to give 2 to their social programming, which, as we know, once they create these programs and the spending, it never goes away.
It never does. Reagan had the best quote on that one. So, yes, sir.
And the other aspect of that are the policy writers that often associate or attached to these appropriations bills, which sets policy.
Yes, sir.
Right now, we've got all these pro-life writers. I would be hard-pressed, given where this party, Democratic Party, stands on life, that we would preserve those.
No, you're 100% correct. And we all have to sit down and talk to the folks over at the Pentagon and say, hey, you know, what can we do for the country here? Is it better for us to just do another continuing resolution or do we fight this battle? It's going to be a challenge because they are not going to roll off the dollar.
Congressman Mark Green, great to have you on the program once again. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks for having me on the show.
All right, folks. Still more Washington Watch to come. Larry Solov, President and CEO and General Counsel of Breitbart News, joins me next. Also still to come, Ken Blackwell will be with us to talk about the new Green Deal. How much green will it cost you? Also, Ken Kukowski is here to unpack the President's emergency declaration. All of that and more on this edition of Washington Watch. Don't go away. We're back right after this.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand and if a fetus does, in fact, feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, here's the question. Is big media, big tech, I should say, and the social media giants, are they trying to cut off conservative voices in the public square? I mean, we've seen a lot of things happen since the last major election, 2016, you know, algorithm changes. We've seen shifting in the platforms. And now we're headed into 2020, major election, which the left, I mean, they're just so angry because they feel like they should have had the 2016 election and they did not. And it would appear that combined with the traditional media, who can't say anything nice about the president and the administration, no matter, I mean, he could cure cancer and he would be accused of emptying out hospitals and getting doctors unemployed. I mean, it's just amazing how they cannot say a single positive thing about this administration. Well, that is filtering over into the social media, which has become really the arena where conservatives communicate and spread conservative ideas. Well, joining me now to talk about this is Larry Solov. He is the president and CEO and general counsel of Breitbart News Network, a great source of information that you'll often see me quoted in. I'm on some of their radio programs, and Larry's been on our program again. And Larry, I welcome you back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Thanks for having me on.
Let me put this question straight to you. Is big tech and social media, are they trying to cut off conservative voices?
Yes, absolutely. They 100% are. And I think, as you pointed out, using the elections as a kind of a bookmarker, after 2016, with the success of this president in particular, the left realized that the conservatives in the country and conservative news had really very successfully grown, and conservative ideas were being very successfully shared outside the, you know, the gate-kept channels of the mainstream media. And one of the biggest ways was on social media. And so since 2016, what you have seen is a concerted effort by big tech, that's Facebook, Google, Twitter, and they all do it in slightly different ways. And please remember that Google owns YouTube, which is probably the second biggest search engine, actually. And they've done it in different ways, but they've changed the algorithms and done a number of things under the auspices of fighting fake news, fighting hate speech, that have really squeezed the reach of conservatives on the social media platforms. And that has had an effect. I think that we have, when I say we, I mean Breitbart and some other entities, news organizations, conservatives, and some conservative politicians have highlighted the problem, slowed down their ability to choke off conservative ideas as much as they wanted to. But they definitely did try, and they're still trying, and it's a major problem.
Now, Larry, are they kind of doing this gradually so as not to, alert everyone of what is really happening? Is this kind of a subtle shift? The algorithm changes. Are they being subtle about this?
Actually not. And in some ways, that's shocking. I'll give you an example. So in late January 2017, Facebook changed their algorithm. And in the course of 24 to 48 hours, the reach of conservatives on Facebook dropped precipitously, in some cases over 75%. And they turned down the spigot, the faucet, if you will, of the flow of information from conservative sources. So in some cases, it's not been subtle. In other ways, they hide behind a very a lack of transparency to hide subtle changes and things like that, that makes it hard to trace exactly what they're doing. So I would say it's both sometimes bold and out there and undeniable, and it's also at times kind of this secret algorithm change that they can tinker with and prevent, make changes that are very hard to pick up.
Maybe it was in part that they never realized how, for them, dangerous social media could become because of the traditional media basically locking out conservatives. Conservatives have used social media very effectively to communicate. But with all of that in mind, going into the 2020 election, clearly we're seeing trends, patterns, activity that suggests that there's more to come in terms of them turning that spigot down even further for conservatives.
There is, and that's where we all play a role, because we all, as conservatives, need to step up and make an extra effort, a concerted effort to share these ideas, double down on our efforts. When you find a Breitbart article you like, when you find something that the FRC does, when get it out there. You are all influencers in your own households, in your own, book clubs, your own softball teams. And, if we do this at that grassroots level, it'll be massively helpful in fighting back.
That's probably more important now than ever, because the playing field is no longer fair at all on social media. So the point I think you're making is that for conservative ideas, conservative candidates to succeed in the 2020 election, every conservative, every concerned constitutionalist is going to have to be engaged by sharing those ideas, what they see on Breitbart, that they hear on Washington Watch. Don't think that others will have access to this, because their ability to reach it is going to be harder.
It's absolutely going to be harder. And that's in some ways the fight of our time, because it's the modern day equivalent of book burning. It's the modern day censorship. It's the byproduct of a totalitarian think of the left, and it is it's something that we have to be aware of, and I thank you for highlighting it, and we need to be very conscious about fighting back against.
Well, Larry, I appreciate actually coming on the program today, but appreciate what Breitbart does in putting a full spectrum of conservative ideas out there and articles covering. You got a great team. And we're glad to work with you and partner with you, and thankful that you're there.
Well, thank you. That means the world coming from you.
Larry Solov, to find out more, go to TonyPerkins.com. And, of course, you know where to find Breitbart. But, I'm often asked, what kind of sources do you use? Breitbart is one of those. So check it out, Breitbart.com, or go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. Larry, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Tony.
All right, folks, don't go away, because right on the other side of the break, we have more Washington Watch to come.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand, and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. The website is tonyperkins.com. All right, the new Green Deal, you've heard about it, right? Radical policy. This is a new congresswoman, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. This is the Green New Deal. Well, how much green is it going to cost you? Well, joining me now to talk about it is Ken Blackwell, FRC Senior Fellow for Human Rights and Constitutional Governance. Among his many assignments over the years include serving as Mayor of Cincinnati, Treasurer of the State of Ohio, and Ambassador to the United Nations Human Rights Commission. And he joins us now. Ken, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, good to be with you.
All right, how far-reaching is this Green Deal?
It is a far-reaching, radical deal with a price tag of $6.6 trillion more than the present level of spending per year. $6.6 trillion.
$6.6 trillion. That's with a T.
That's with a T.
Now, you go back a ways. You remember green stamps. That's a lot of green stamps.
That's a lot of green stamps. But you know what's fascinating about this is that at a time when the president is doing a frontal attack on failed socialism, this is the most far-fetched socialistic proposal that we've ever witnessed.
But it's overt.
That's right.
It's no longer hidden. I mean, the left has had this policy for these types of policies for a while. But I mean, this new wave of what I call the new Democratic Party is openly socialist.
Well, yeah. And it goes counter to the values of this Democratic Republic of ours that we've had, you know, for, you know, just over 245 years. I mean, it's basically saying that at a time when they're trying to run faith in God out of the public square, they're basically saying that government, big government, replaces God. Mm-hmm. Individual initiative has no place in this proposal. They are actually talking about people paying people for not only not working, but for not wanting to work.
Well, it's, of course, it's attack, much like Barack Obama, on fossil fuels. I mean, it's attacks, you know, the fuel that drives our economic engine. I mean, this, as I see it, if they were to succeed with this, this would plunge us into being a third world country.
It would, in fact, put us on the path of Venezuela. Look, the president has done a wonderful job of redirecting the flow of capital. When he took office, there was $2 trillion sitting offshore because our regulatory red tape was burdensome and our tax rates were discouraging to investment. He came in, fixed it with his tax proposal and with his deregulation initiatives, and he redirected that flow of capital. We're growing at a sustained pace. We're creating jobs, actually more jobs than we have workers for, and we've started to see a lift in income among working families. And what this would do is reverse all of that.
Well, if we've got more jobs than we have people, that means more people would be like you and have multiple titles, right?
Absolutely. And what's funny about that? And then it's not funny, because it's part of their comprehensive agenda. You know, they're now coming up with proposals to kill babies outside of the womb.
Yeah.
At a time when we are, that not only has moral implication, yeah. It has economic implications.
Well, yeah, that's – I mean, I don't want to get off on that. But the only way to grow a country's GDP means its population has to grow as well. And we are killing future generations. And they're stepping that up. It's amazing what the left is proposing, and it's no longer in secrecy or in the shadows. It's wide open. And before we run out of time, I want to move on to this. Just so our listeners understand, Ken Blackwell, the implications for the average family. What does this mean, these types of policies? Now, I don't think this is at risk of actually passing, because certainly the president would veto it, but it's not going to get through the Senate. But what are the implications for these types of policies to the average family?
Well, the implication is that would be a rise in their energy bill. It would mean that their family income would take another hit, because this would put us on a accelerated path of fast inflation and interest rates, and so as a
which means political instability. Which, I mean, as you said, Venezuela. That's not too attractive.
No, and one of the things that I really appreciate is that the president got out in front of this.
Yes,
and he defined it. He framed the argument, and he's going to win it.
One of my favorite lines in the State of the Union is that we will not be a socialist nation. he, as you said, he cut right to the chase.
Absolutely. And, you know, I thought that what he said that I thought was also important is that we are now moving away from a situation of, you know, big government and bureaucracy to one of faith and growth.
Ken Blackwell, as always, great to have you on the program. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you, Tony.
Ken Blackwell, Senior Fellow for Human Rights and Constitutional Governance here at the Family Research Council, former Mayor of Cincinnati and Treasurer of Ohio, among many other things. All right, coming up next, Ken Kulkowski, Senior Legal Editor for Breitbart News, joins us to discuss the president's executive, or rather emergency declaration that will allow him to reallocate resources to build the wall on our southern border. That's next. Don't go away. More to come.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy, from unicorns to the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. In FRC's analysis, 10 Myths on Abortion, join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to our other free resources, go to frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. So glad that you are with us. The website is tonyperkins.com. Be sure and check that out. Lots of resources there for you. And you need to be, geared up to go to that website, find out what's there each day. But a better way to do it is to download the Stand Firm app. That way, it's right there in your pocket, your smartphone. You've got the app. We send out notifications. So when you need to contact your member of Congress, whether it's over the Born Alive Infant Protection Act, if that's it, look. In fact, that's coming up in the Senate for a vote on February the 25th. So, I mean, it's just a week away. That vote's going to be taking place. You need to contact your two senators. All of that is right there on the app. You just follow the links over. We've got the email addresses. We've got the phone numbers. We make it so easy. So download the app, the Stand Firm app. You can get it at the App Store or go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. All right, we were talking earlier in the program about the president negotiating or coming up with a deal with Congress to keep government open, the funding bills that continues government going. Also, a part of that, which was the, the real stumbling block, was the border security. Now, he did not get all of the funding that he had asked for in that, but at the same time that the budget deal was struck, he also declared a national emergency, which gives him certain powers to reallocate money that's already been allocated, but to direct it toward the wall. Joining me now to talk about this is Ken Klukowski, senior legal editor for Breitbart News, as well as senior counsel at both First Liberty Institute and American Civil Rights Union. Ken, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
Well, a couple of things I want to unpack with the president's declaration of emergency, allowing him to begin this process of building the wall. First, let's talk about the and we were talking about this a couple of weeks ago because we've known that this is was a high probability. The constitutional footing of the president to make this declaration.
Absolutely, because even among a lot of our friends, you expect the left to say whatever they're going to say. But there's been a lot of confusion among conservatives on this. And unfortunately, there's been a lot of uninformed commentary because conservatives always come out at the right place if you just give them the right information. And that's what's key. And in this case, it's critical for all of our friends on this show to understand that the president here is not invoking any of his inherent constitutional powers, none of his Article II powers, like commander-in-chief authority. In this case, you have a president who is only acting under a specific act of Congress, a federal statute called the National Emergencies Act of 1976. It's been used 59 times before. This is just number 60. In fact, by the way, the 59th time was actually earlier this month. It was also President Trump, just regarding U.S. relations with Venezuela, because, of course, the turmoil going on there and who we're recognizing as a president.
Well, I didn't see the sky fall.
You know, maybe I missed the press release, but I didn't see the sky fall either. I did not hear a news story that in the National Archives, the Constitution burst into flames there. One would almost think that this is actually just part of the rule of law. And that's exactly what's going on, is that the president is acting under one specific federal statute. And then Congress, not the Constitution, Congress has said that in different types of emergencies, they have put in 136 separate laws that Congress passed, 136 different types of emergency powers. And all that's going on by invoking this specific border emergency is that it is just giving him the authority to transfer some funding that Congress has already voted for to move it from one bank account to another. Congress authorized building a wall in the Secure Fence Act of 2006. So that is, again, Congress that has acted. Congress authorized a wall, but they've just never appropriated the money to build it. All this emergency does is it allows the president to move the money from one bank account to another to actually fund the wall.
Well, Ken Kukowski, with that in mind, that the Congress has authorized the wall.
Yes.
They've authorized this money. It's just in another account.
Yes.
Related, I believe, to security.
Yes.
And so the president is just invoking this authority granted to him by Congress under federal statute to reallocate the money to accomplish what the Congress approved.
That's right. And specifically, the emergency declaration specifies that, for example, Title 10 of the United States Code, that's the military. It's you're a former Marine, so, I mean, you know all that. Title 10 USC, Sections 2808 and 12302 say, in the event of a declaration of emergency, the president may, and then it talks about military construction and funding. So again, this is Congress who has written these laws, and so he just checked the box by putting out the right kind of emergency declaration to legally authorize just transferring that money and authorizing personnel to actually spend that money and actually build the wall. The military does a great job of building the wall. I mean, the Army Corps of Engineers is what the best construction outfits on planet Earth. These people know how to do it, and the president's getting it done just as he promised the American people that he would.
Well, let's talk about, in that context, in that light, with that backdrop, with that understanding, these claims by Nancy Pelosi that, well, if he goes down this path, that will allow a Democratic president to confiscate guns and impose gun control. How would that work?
You know, conservatives have never listened to Nancy Pelosi, and this would be a really lousy time to start. In this case, the speaker is saying things that she has to know are not true. So it's just so disappointing to see that kind of blatant misinforming of the American public going on. Excuse me. But remember, these are the same people who said with Obamacare, you know, if you like your plan, you can keep it. You like your doctor, you can keep it. So let's give them points for consistency.
It could be, because she usually says you have to pass it, then read it. So she hasn't read it yet.
Well, that's a good point. It was 1,200 pages. And, you know, I mean, these are just laws. So it's I'm not sure what kind of priority that is on her list. But it's what we have here is that would only people would only need to be concerned. Let's talk about grabbing guns, for example. There is no statute on the books. There is no act of Congress that says in the event of declaring an emergency, the president can grab your guns. There's no law that says in an emergency, the president can go after your church or the president can shut down free speech. Now, even if there were such a gun grabbing law, it'd be unconstitutional. It would violate the Second Amendment. But again, there are no such laws on the books. That's why this does not create any sort of dangerous precedent. The only precedent it is following, not creating, but following, is to say if the president uses one law Congress has passed, sometimes it allows him to also activate other laws that Congress has passed. It does nothing to create an emergency power that is not found in a law that Congress has made. And there is no gun-grabbing law.
So let me just, before I move on to the next point, because I want to kind of lay out a timeline on what this looks like and what obstacles the president may run into. But has the mainstream media taken Nancy Pelosi to task on that?
Somehow they've been too busy, I guess, on other things. It's been, going after the president because of where he placed the comma in his latest tweet or whatever. No, there's actually been a lot of blue-on-blue violence in the Democratic Party right now, and the media isn't focusing on that. They're certainly not fact-checking Nancy Pelosi the way they claim to be fact-checking President Trump. But I'll tell you, take one specific example about that. They're taking the president to task because he said, they say they're going to put this in their legal briefs, in the legal challenges to this. This makes no sense to me, but they say, aha, we're going to put it in the brief, where he said, look, I don't need to do this for an emergency. It's just a faster way to do it. I understand exactly what the president's saying there, and that is that there's all sorts of other federal laws under which he could have found some funding sources and given them to some outfits. But the federal laws we just cited earlier in this interview, they explicitly say they can only be used if he declares an emergency. And so the president is saying the military can get stuff done a whole lot faster than other people, and they have access to these massive bank accounts. And so it was the more efficient way for him to keep his promise. That's not a legal liability. There's no legal consequence to that at all. It's just a statement of fact. So I don't even know what the left is thinking when they say, oh, my goodness, somehow this makes his declaration invalid. Absolutely not. It's even a confusing statement. I'm a lawyer, and I still can't figure it out.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. My guest is Ken Klukowski, senior legal editor for Breitbart News, as well as senior counsel at both First Liberty Institute and the American Civil Rights Union. All right, you talk about legal challenges. Let's talk about that now as the president seeks to move forward with this. I mean, this is nothing new. I mean, we've seen the president with trying to restrict those coming into the country that may be a threat to America. That was challenged in court. We saw the president reverting back to a pre-Obama 11th hour policy in our military as it applied to transgenders. That was challenged in the courts. So no doubt this is going to be challenged. What's that look like?
We can't get through our morning coffee without the left filing a new lawsuit against President Trump, even when, as you just said, he's just doing things that President Obama or previous presidents have done. Somehow it all becomes illegal if President Trump does it. We should expect multiple lawsuits. Certainly, if the House were to vote under the 1997 Supreme Court case Raines v. Byrd, if the House passes a majority resolution, that can authorize Nancy Pelosi or Jerry Nadler to file suit in the name of the House and sue the president, supposedly, I guess, for violating the Appropriations Clause of the Constitution or something like that. There might be other individuals who would have standing to sue. I think many of these groups claiming they're going to sue, their lawsuits, I think, are just for fundraising purposes. They're going to be thrown out because they don't have standing. But with whichever of these lawsuits, and I'm expecting multiple, whichever ones actually have plaintiffs who have standing, the court has jurisdiction, they do reach the legal merits of those cases, I would expect they're going to be smart enough to file in districts, judicial districts, with a majority of very liberal judges. They'll probably pick districts in one of the most liberal federal appeals courts, most likely the Ninth Circuit, I would guess. If they can find a way to file it in the Fourth Circuit, that would be another choice, or the D.C. Circuit. So that what they're hoping to do is to get a left-wing judge to issue a preliminary injunction to immediately block the wall before it can start and keep it blocked while the case goes up on appeal. Those appellate courts should be expected to affirm the lower court, you know, the, another left-wing ruling, meaning that we have to get this all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, where I am fully confident that the president will win on all fours, just like he did on the travel ban. There are ways to expedite and accelerate these cases. I would hope that he could have it up to the Supreme Court in maybe an eight-month time frame.
Do you think it may be like, for instance, the transgender policy in the military, where you had a district court imposed a stay on that, which, you know, a district court, I mean, just one federal judge at the district court level. It baffles me that a judge like that can actually challenge the authority of the commander-in-chief and keep his hands tied as this thing is adjudicated. Well, the president, his team went straight to the Supreme Court, or it took them a while, but they got to the Supreme Court to lift the stay until it was adjudicated. Do you see a similar play out here?
There has been an epidemic of what we call nationwide injunctions, or Justice Gorsuch jokingly calls them cosmic injunctions. The country is divided into 94 judicial districts. Only the Supreme Court has coast-to-coast jurisdiction. Most of the time, it is an abuse of authority for a single district judge to presume to issue an order blocking the entire U.S. government. If that happens here, we should be very encouraged that just this past week, the U.S. Supreme Court, for the first time in decades, bypassed a federal appeals court and is taking and fast-tracking of the case that raises the issue of whether the U.S. Census can ask every person it's counting in the country whether they are a U.S. citizen. They are bypassing the federal appeals court to do it, and I think it shows that some of the justices are getting fed up by these lower court judges who are acting just as part of the resistance, it seems, by some of the orders that they're making. And that's why I'm hopeful that the president can get this up to the Supreme Court quickly, sooner rather than later, where, again, I am confident that he will prevail and be able to show that to the American people before we go back to the polls in November of 2020.
I mean, some of this is nonsensical, that you can't do a census. In a census, you can't ask someone if they're American citizens.
Oh, a quick digression on that is the 1820 census was the first one to ask, by the way, are you a U.S. citizen? And it was routinely asked every 10 years with every new census up through 1950. The only reason they stopped doing it in 1950 is because then they started sending out little mini censuses to just 3% of households every year, and that's where they asked it. But the idea that the founding fathers could ask it, it could be asked all the way through the middle of the last century, but now all of a sudden it becomes illegal to ask that. You know what the left is doing here. And again, the Supreme Court, I'm convinced, is going to set it right.
Ken Klukowski, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tony. God bless.
All right. We're going to be watching this very closely as the president pursues the building of a wall, or I should say a structure that will ensure security on our southern border, as he, like it with everything else, challenged with every step that he takes. But he's resolute. In fact, that's what I told him. In a meeting I had recently was that we appreciate the fact that he is resolute and he will not yield to the left. All right, folks, out of time. Thanks so much for joining us. And, you know, when it comes to not yielding, you know what the Apostle Paul said in Ephesians 6? He says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, you've prepared and taken your stand, that's it. By all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.